Hello. A view? Hello?
A view? What are you talking about?
You know, a view. It's from Mary Poppins, the original. He grunts.
You got me.
View! Hello!
Oh, yes, definitely. A view? Hello? View? Hello?
Oh, I skipped that part.
Tis him Red Course again.
Hey, what do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Welcome to the Mouse and Castles.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hi there. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle. Come on in. Pull up a bar stool as we serve up some of the latest and greatest in the world of Disney. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us for the podcast. It's been a hot second, Mr. Aaron Goins, has it not?
It's been a hot second, but I blame you.
whoa, sir. Oh, dang.
You went gallivanting off to Disneyland without me.
I did. That's true.
And I can't even pay you back because the next time I go, you're going with me.
I know. You normally, because who has averaged, I think I've outpaced you this year.
We should do the math.
Let's listen. Some public math.
Do the math.
Right,
yeah.
Now. So
who's been to Disney more in 2019?
Because we both went like at the end of last year. So
yeah,
I guess this time.
Let's not count that.
Yeah, so we can't count that. But this year,
starting
I guess.
2019.
Did I go in. I think the first time I went this year was Memorial Day. So I've only been twice. I've been twice this year, but I still think I have you beat.
To Disney parks? You've
yeah.
been twice?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I went in March.
Okay. Yep, I remember.
Disney World.
Yep.
Did some Magic Kingdom and some Disney Springs. And then I went with you guys in June. Was that when we went? Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah, we went in June.
That's right. You were at the Memorial Day trip. I just realized.
Well, I went.
Or not the Memorial Day trip.
No, I went to the Galaxy's Edge
trip. I say Memorial Day trip because the Memorial Day trip, that was not Disney. That was also California. But I said that I was thinking of the June trip. So now we're tied is what we're saying.
So we're tied.
We're
going to
be
twice, and then we're both going. And again in November, so we'll have three times for the year, right?
Ah, but I have you beat, sir, because I already have plans for September.
Well, I do have possible plans to go back in December for the Rise of the Resistance ride.
Oh, so okay. Well,
we'll see. We're fighting this one out.
Can I come with you, or am I not allowed to?
So no,
you can time.
No. We got to. This is now a competition. You can't come with me.
I will win this. I'm closer to the park, so
you are. You're in a position to win for sure.
Well, and I have random because of my. I have kind of random weird shifts too at my incoming job that I've got when I get out of training here. So I'll have kind of windows that I can make that drive, just for the hell of it, right?
This is true.
Listen, come at me, bro. Come at me. I will out Disney you. No, I went back, but. You would think it was for a fun trip with Bethany and the convenience, like you buy the multi-day ticket military. So I still had one day left over from our June trip. And the Air Force had paid for me to come all the way out here to Las Vegas for training. So, you know, it's like, well, I'm 4.5 hours away. That's not why I went. I went for you, not you, Aaron Goins. You, the listening audience. I sacrificed just for the public good. Right, you have real journalists out there reporting live on some of today's biggest issues, and then you have me at Disneyland.
You needed the follow-up visit, right?
I needed
the follow-up
to report
Galaxy's Edge visit.
Everyone's talking about how this is a ghost town. I needed to see for myself.
It's true. It's like propaganda. I don't know what to believe. I see, you know, the big fans of Star Wars and the big fans of Galaxy's Edge that are saying, no, it's crowded and the wait times are long and it's populated the way it should be. And then I hear the people that are kind of anti, you know, kind of want to like rain on the parade a little bit. And they're like, oh, no, it's nothing. It's a failure. You know, it's kind of like, where's the truth? The truth lies somewhere in the middle, right?
Yes, exactly. Well, and allow me to begin. The Galaxy's Edge propaganda segment. Let me assure you, everything's fine. There are many crowds at the park enjoying the Smuggler's Run ride, as well as the... I can't do it, all right.
Where did you get that music?
I just went quickly to propaganda music on YouTube, and the first one is North Korean propaganda music.
Okay. Which may not have been the
most patriotic choice, actually. It's very North Korean. Anyway. But though I'm not here.
Demonetized.
I'm here to, I know, right? Somewhere Kim Jong-un is just, you know, like flagging stuff on YouTube. I will dispel the propaganda, in fact. Dispel or prove. I guess it depends on whose propaganda talking about. I'm here to tell you from first person that indeed I can confirm the crowd levels at Galaxy's Edge are surprisingly, if not shockingly low. It's crazy. I witnessed it.
Really?
In person. So I would, honest, if I were to throw a number out there, I'd say about 65%, maybe 65% of what I've normally seen at Disneyland. And this is a Saturday afternoon that we're there, right at the beginning of August. School's not back, but it's like the crowd, it's basically just light populated crowds throughout. We went to California Adventure first, and then went through, did the whole Disneyland Park and then Galaxy's Edge towards the end. And like the best way I can illustrate it is like 45 minutes before, not Happily Ever After, what's the Disneyland version of the fireworks show called? Step Into the Magic, at least that's the name of the song. Like 45 minutes out, I get a call from Bethany's roommate. Her and her boyfriend were on the trip with us. So it's the four of us. And I get a call because Bethany's phone's dead. And she's like, well, we've got a seat for the fireworks show. It's like 45 minutes out. And I'm kind of in the – I've carved out a spot already. And I'm like, well, I've got a spot, guys, too. It's pretty great. It was like to the side over towards Tomorrowland, off one of those areas that's roped off. And they're like, no, we're like right in front of Walt Disney and Mickey, like in front of the castle, 45 minutes before. And I show up, and there's like still plenty of room for people to filter in up there. And I think
so
that's
the parks
best.
Are lightly populated.
And Galaxy's Edge, which we'll talk about that too in a second. But that's probably the best illustration I can give. Yes, sure, certainly there are crowds and it's well populated. It's not like a ghost town. That's a gross exaggeration. But definitely it's a great experience for the park. It's the best, most freeing feeling I've ever had going to a Disney park. I loved it.
Right, because like light crowds are great for, you know, for the experience and the comfort of visiting a Disney park, but
for you regulars,
you kind of want to see it a little more crowded for the success of the park, right?
For you regulars, Guardians Breakout, 45 minutes. So Incredicoaster, 15-20 minutes.
Whoa.
What were some of the other, like Pirates of the Caribbean stayed at 5 or 10 minutes. Even like Space Mountain was staying under an hour, 45 minutes, 55 minutes. It was great. And Millennium Falcon ride stayed at right an hour. The whole time.
Smuggler's That's still run. A long wait.
It's just trending slightly to a bit under what the normal wait times are.
And can I ask you some questions or do you have a pre-prepared way you want to walk through this?
It's me. I don't have notes. I have the, I went on the trip. No, I'm here to answer.
Cause I'm curious about a couple things. So the things that when we were there, the things that were kind of the long waits were, you know, you had to go to Savvy's workshop. If you wanted to build a lightsaber, you had to kind of run there and get in line. The droid depot was pretty easy to get into, but then also the cantina, Oga's cantina, was another thing that you had to wait a while. It would fill up. Like, are those things just kind of walk up and do it now?
No, in between. So kind of taking them one at a time. Oga's cantina, which is the one I wanted, I gave up because we got into the park at like 11. And by the time we were at Galaxy's Edge, it was late afternoon. It was probably like 3 or 4. But I just, for funsies, walked up to the guy, and there was a line there. And I was like, what's the line here for? He's like, oh, that's the line that's like standby additional seating that we might still have at the end of the night. I was like, wait, when did you guys finish the reservations for the day? And he's like, oh, like an hour ago. So it was like, it doesn't run out first thing in the morning. They're still distributing those cantina reservations throughout the day.
Yeah, but it fills up by, it sounds like, by like 2 p.m.?
Yeah, if 2 or 3. Up. So it's not like you have to like get there when the park opens and go straight there and get your reservation and they're gone in an hour. It's more like a, and they do it online too, but like it'll fill up throughout the day and cut off in the afternoon. But it's, so definitely crowds, definitely interest there. But I guess that kind of illustrates that, what was it? Oh, the droid building depot, that was like completely free, no line at all.
Yeah, I'm sure that one was. But what about Savi's workshop?
We didn't actually try to build anything, but I didn't see any line. Well, I saw people going there and getting reservations, so I would assume it was still open for reservations later in the day that afternoon. Because again, it was probably about 3 o'clock, and I saw people walking up, so. I think that's a pretty safe bet. So it's definitely the crowds were a lot lighter, a lot less. Like when you and I were there, Aaron, it was probably it felt like when towards the end of the reservation when a lot of people were filtering out and you just suddenly had a lot more freedom to walk. That's basically what it was like. You had elbow room when you go through like the shopping area.
What was it compared to like the height of when we were in there?
Like the most busy,
like was it
when
less crowded than the controlled crowds that they had during the reservation period?
By far, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So the controlled crowds, when we went there at the beginning of your reservation, that's when the new flood is there and the last stragglers go out. So that's when the most people are there. And it's probably like, maybe not half, but again, like 65% of what that was. But it would compare to the end of our reservation, like the end of that 4-hour window when the crowds had kind of dissipated and the Millennium Falcon ride goes down to like 20 minutes. That was kind of, that would be a good comparison for the crowd. So it's definitely settled in. A lot less character appearances. We were in there about 3 hours and we saw Rey once. And no, that was, we only saw Rey. Rey we saw briefly in the Resistance part. And no First Order troopers, no Kylo Ren. I was hanging out by the blue milk stand in the First Order area for almost an hour. None of the troopers showed up for the show. And it's something I've actually heard people complain about that I was like, you're crazy. But it really does seem like they've pulled back on a lot of the already kind of limited population of characters, which I think is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, I agree. I actually kind of, as much as we kind of ran into characters while we were there, I actually felt like there could have been more of that kind of stuff going on. I expected it to be more populated with characters, than even when we saw it. So if you're saying it's less, then that's definitely disappointing.
Yeah, substantially. Although we did like hang out with Rey, and that was kind of cool. Like she was just kind of waltzing along the Resistance area, and again, there's not that many people, so there may be 15 or 20 people have a light crowd that's kind of gathered around her and taking picture, and she's kind of interacting with kids, and everyone's taking the social cue to not really interrupt or take pictures and just let the kids kind of interact, which is kind of cute. And of course stayed perfectly in character, and was just talking to like all these different little kids in character is really sweet. But like that was the only time I saw it. The other interesting thing is I became sort of the Galaxy's Edge tour guide for Bethany's roommate, Katie, and her boyfriend, Ed. I was there, and I was kind of the expert on all things Galaxy's Edge, because that's basically all we've done on the show is cover it ad nauseum. So I'm like, yeah, there's where the secret Dianoga is. Oh, if you go to this shop, this is where you can... I kind of explain the layout of, like, we'll enter here, and this is sort of the Resistance area, and if you go over there, it's the Imperial thing. And it's just kind of fun to be the tour guide. But I also kind of wanted to low-key get Ed's impression of the park, because he's a big Star Wars fan in that he loves the movies, Like recently, I was talking to him, bought them all on Blu-ray and watched them in chronological order for fun. He'd never done that before, but certainly not a guy who's listening to podcasts or knows all the details of the park or anything like that. He just knows, oh, it's a Star Wars park. He doesn't know what Batuu is or when it's set or any of the in-universe stuff. And so I kind of, when we were about done, we'd done pretty much everything as far as the tour of the park, minus Smuggler's Run. That was the last thing we were going to do. And I was like, so what do you think, man? He's like, ah, it's amazing. Which I can attest, like, especially when he saw the Millennium Falcon, he was blown away. That's like the moment for pretty much anybody in the park is when you see the Millennium Falcon for the first time. He's like, it's really good. The detail is incredible. The design, it's a lot of shopping. Which is true. A lot of square footage right now the park is dedicated to shopping of some kind or another. And that was kind of his takeaway until Smuggler's Run, and that's what really kind of like put him over the top. Loved the ride, loved the Falcon, going through the interior, the kind of, you know, seeing this weird, crazy alien with a funny accent giving us a mission, right? Because he has no idea who Hondo Ohnaka is. So, which is going to be 99% of everybody going through that room, right? So it's kind of interesting to see all of that play out. But then like when you walk onto the Falcon and you're hanging out and like there's the medical bay and there's the Djarik table, that is the crown jewel of the park right now. And it shows it's definitely there. But it does kind of reinforce when we originally went there, when we recorded On Location, Aaron, our takeaway of like the park right now is an incredibly designed park that doesn't have a lot to offer, but what it does have to offer is amazing. But it's very noticeable when you hang out there over an extended period of time. Like, yeah, there's definitely the centerpiece ride isn't here yet.
Right. I mean, to be the Disney apologist for a second, I'm going to put on my Disney apologist hat right now.
Yep, hang on.
And if you think about Galaxy's Edge, it's just a section of a larger park. Right.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are kind of treating it like it's its own park, and it should have, you know, all these attractions and things that it's gonna, you know, just be this constant flood of people there. But if you compare it to sections of any of the other parks, like if you just go into, you know, Cars Land, or if you just go into Pandora, if you do it in that type of a comparison, I still feel like Galaxy's Edge is so much more expansive, and there's a lot more to do.
Oh, for sure.
There.
Yeah.
Than any single section of any other park. And I think like the layout is kind of interesting too, because Galaxy's Edge is kind of hidden away. It's in the back of the park. Mm. It's not on a thoroughfare. You don't have to go
it's
through
a very,
there to get
yeah,
to
it's
anywhere
a very
else.
Tucked away feeling. All three
right.
entrances.
So like there's other areas of Disneyland or California Adventure that you literally have to walk through that area to get to other things, whereas Galaxy's Edge, you could kind of miss it.
Galaxy's Edge is kind of the milk and eggs of the Disney parks. You have to kind of walk by everything else to get to the back of the aisle before you pick up your essentials.
Right, yeah. So unless you're purposely going there, it's not like you're going to stumble upon it like you may other areas of the parks. That become a bit more crowded. Plus, one of their, you know, the flagship ride hasn't even opened yet. So I think there's still going to be more fanfare around things that are going to happen around Galaxy's Edge. And I think Disneyland versus Disney World is probably going to be a whole different type of dynamic. I have a feeling that Disney World is going to be a bit crazier as far as crowd levels and as far as wait times.
Yeah,
for the rides. I don't know that Disney World, it doesn't matter what, if you're talking, you know, any of these new top of the line rides, they're for the first year, the wait time is, you know, 2 hours plus.
Yeah.
And I think even for some of these rides that have been open now for a long time, even, you know, Seven Dwarfs Mine Train is still ridiculous how long you have to wait to get on that ride. And that thing's been open for years now.
Yeah.
So I think the Disney World experience, and we'll be able to see for ourselves when we go in November, may be a little bit different of a story, and definitely we won't be hearing the word ghost town to describe it.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt that for a second.
Now I'm taking off my Disney apologist hat before we talk about Lion King.
We need Disney apologist hats. That would be fun. I've had some fun ideas for like a show mug for Mouse and Castle. I would love to do like a, or maybe not a mug, like a beer glass. That would be kind of cool. Well,
you know, like a pint.
I see all this great
that says Disney apologist tears.
That Disney. Exactly. There you go. Yeah. This is what happens when I've spent all this time in the park looking at all these cool pieces of merch and stuff. Like, we have a cool logo, and I love our our Disney pub, idea that we came up with now like a year ago. And so maybe, who knows? We'll see what we can do about it.
Get some merch. Yeah.
Get some of the merch. Well, that's what and on my Air Force base, we have a craft shop that has laser etching. So that we could do like a fancy schmancy. All right, I need to stop. This is topic for another time. Topic for another time. You know what we should be talking about?
You must take your place in the circle of life.
You have to. Sorry. Lion King.
You don't have to.
He's like, no, you don't. Riley, stop it. Why wee? Bumblebee. So we watched Lion King. It's been out for a hot second, but like I say, it's my fault. I ran off to Disney. But
it's a good excuse.
Let me just jump into it. Jump into the red meat. What'd you think, Aaron? In the lexicon of Disney live action adaptations, we've had some not so good and some decent and some pretty good. And then some.
Did we ever talk about Dumbo and how much I was disappointed by that?
Did we? I think
that is the low end. I don't think we ever really talked about it.
Is that the bottom? Is that the, yeah,
I think that's the low end for me.
That is how low
when we talk about the live action ones.
Yeah, that is the how, what's the name of the, that is how low you can go, basically. How low can you go?
Well, can I? I'll confess something here as a Disney fan that may make people upset. I couldn't even finish it, Dumbo.
What?
It was kind of a whole thing, and I won't get into the long story because we're talking about Lion King, not Dumbo. But real quick. I was watching with family, so it was a big room full of my family, my mom, my dad,
So you're in public. You're in public.
Yeah, I rented it, in my house, in the living room. I hadn't seen it in the theater. I was excited to see it, even though I'd heard negative reviews. And I was, got my family there, my parents, they're kind of like old Disney fans. That's like the only thing they let us watch when we were kids was Disney stuff, so they're really familiar with the classic Disney movies. And wow, were we all disappointed. It wasn't even just me. It was kind of like people started talking about 15 minutes, 20 minutes into the movie. That's when a movie's bad, when people just start having side conversations.
Oh, gosh.
Because the movie can't hold their attention. And there were a lot of distractions going on and stuff like that. And we got about 3/4 of the way through it, and my parents were kind of tired. And they're like, you know what? We think we're just going to leave. And they went home. And I was like, I can sit here and watch it by myself and finish it, or I could turn it off too and go to bed. And I turned it off, and I never, the rental period ended on iTunes, it's just like, and I never finished it.
It's that countdown clock of sadness. Say something. Anyway.
But yeah, so that's my 45-second review of Dumbo. Wow, was I just disappointed.
You very much confirmed, though, it wasn't just the obnoxious kids in the theater when we watched it. It was also a bad movie. It's just not.
Yeah, not, and I'll probably try to give it another shot. Like, I'll give it a couple months and then watch it by myself.
Hang on one second.
Focus on it.
I dropped it. I dropped it over here. Hang on. I got. Just putting on my Disney apologist hat for a second.
Okay.
So about the thing about Dumbo, though, is that it had some good moments isolated with like the relationship with Dumbo and his mom, but that's so pushed to the side, you like forget about it, and then they bring it back at the very end of the movie. in a way that's almost frustrating. You're like, why have we been watching all these other characters that are dumb and I don't care about?
It's, and it the sad thing is it has such a great cast.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
That you're like, wow, this is going to be the potential. And I remember when the trailer came out where both of us were excited for the possibilities of a Tim Burton Dumbo with this cast. And yeah, I just thoroughly disappointed. But we can talk about Lion King, but I just wanted to kind of set the low bar for me when it comes to these live action movies. Dumbo's kind of been that low bar. And I think Lion King was a whole different animal, no pun intended, that it was a different thing than we had gotten so far with live action, in that it was the closest recreation of the original than we've gotten by far.
The most faithful adaptation, easily. In fact, I can, you can't really review this movie basically to say that it's exactly like the other movie, but new takes of the songs. And Billy Eichner. But, that's my review.
Well, true. I mean, the big things that stand out to me that were different were I did think that Billy Eichner's version of Timon was a lot different. Even though there's some similar characteristics, I thought he did it. He had his own take on it, and that actually was the one individual character that I thought was the most different. Maybe aside from the hyenas.
Yeah, that's true.
Shenzi, I think, was her name.
Yeah, yeah.
Was they had really they did something different with the hyenas. That was kind of the other big thing that I thought was different, which I actually really enjoyed. But beyond that, like everything else, the characterizations, the everything, I mean, it just felt very much like they were just trying to do a shot for shot remake of the original. And maybe that's the safe play because that's the, you know, arguably the most beloved of the Disney animated movies is Lion King.
What's so funny is I distinctly remember a YouTuber I like to watch from time to time, at least his movie reviews, is this guy, Jeremy Johns. And he did a, he's talking about like looking ahead, a video looking ahead at the movies of 2019 and looking at Lion King. He literally explicitly said, as a kid of the 90s, all he wants to see is a exact faithful copy of Lion King because it's perfect and you don't need to change anything. And that's kind of what he got.
Yeah, it kind of is. The one thing I'll say, though, to its credit, is the beginning of the movie, and I think probably what you saw at D23.
Yes, it is indeed what I saw at D23.
And correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm
was it that? Was it finished? Was it that finished?
No, it was not that finished. Because I just remember it. I mean, again, this is reaching back 2 years, but I don't remember it looking that good. So, of course, it's 2 years early. There's no way they had it finished. It's just from a practical perspective.
But that opening scene, as you know, having watched it when I was much younger and then having watched it many times since, and then watching that opening scene, and it was very much like they took the exact same thing and just made it look really cool. And it's kind of hard to explain how you just get all these pops of nostalgia that are hitting you. And you almost are just happy. Like, I'm glad they didn't change anything. Like, I don't know if I wanted the whole movie to be so close, but that opening scene really sets the tone.
It does.
And you're just like, oh, wow. This is wow. You know, they really nailed this. Like, the look and the feel and the just the music, everything just really fit and kind of set the tone for the expectation of like, okay, this is, they didn't really mess with this one that much.
It's interesting because especially that first that opening number, they even re-record it, but the re-recording is super faithful. Here it is. I mean, it sounds almost exactly the same.
And when the theater I was in, at least, I didn't watch it opening weekend, but I saw it like the following Monday or Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a super big crowd, but it was still generally a big crowd. And as soon as that note hits, that opening vocal, the entire theater just erupted in cheers.
Nice. I love it.
So, I mean, it had the effect, had the intended effect, at least on the crowd I was with.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, another musical number where, and this is where they actually do have kind of a twist on some of the songs versus the original. And you first notice it in the number, I Just Can't Wait to Be King. And again, I know Aaron. I'm the music nerd here. Like the super, because like the vocals are pretty similar.
Well, I've never seen a King of Beasts.
Although very noticeable, John Oliver. John Oliver just plays John Oliver.
Which fits pretty well with Zazu. Zazu was kind of like John Oliver before John Oliver.
Before John Oliver was really a thing. Yeah. But the interesting thing they do about halfway through the song is they kind of change up the number and make it more of a instrumental number. It's like right here. You go like to the African drums.
Yeah. But then it's back to the norm.
And so they have like a nice little interlude. So there's some little things there that like, especially if you know the song so well, like I do from the original, it's kind of neat to see where they do some twists to the
music
that we know so
well. One of my big complaints about some of these live action movies is that they change the songs too much. Because for me, the biggest thing that I really latched onto when I growing up watching these movies was the music. And so like the songs were just like part of me.
It's kind
of like
burned into your brain slash
heart.
Yeah,
the lyrics were part of, you know, the movie for me. So when they really veer from the lyrics that I'm used to hearing,
guys,
it kind of was a negative for me.
I remember quite literally, I remember Aaron long before about, this is like Mouse and Castle before Mouse and Castle was a thing. A semi-irate Aaron Goins talking to one Riley Blanton over the phone about, we were arguing about the Beauty and the Beast live action movie. And I was like, no, it's really good. I love the things. And you're like, we talk back and forth and I'm talking about all the additional backstory and I love the performance and vocals. And then like right at the end, like your checkmate move was like, and I'm blanking on the Gaston. So on the Gaston's number, like they changed that. They changed the song, damn it. They changed it. It sucks. That's why.
They left out the whole part where he was like, LeFou, I'm afraid I've been thinking a dangerous pastime.
I know. This is exactly like, what you said. Yes, that's
it's not even in the movie.
No, and you were so pissed off about it.
I still am, apparently. but the one thing I did appreciate about Lion King is that they really didn't do too much to change the lyrics up in most of the songs.
With the exception
of Be Prepared.
And what was the... I'd mentioned him at the beginning. The Billy Eichner, Hakuna Matata. That's really the one where they have some fun with it. Like right here.
Changing my name. I mean, to what, Brad?
Well, some of the little like commentary throughout, sure. But the main lyrics of the song, they really didn't mess with. And then the one part...
The crowning... Gets, I was going to say, like, the crowning part of the song right here...
Stop me!
No, I'm not. You disgust me. Hakuna Matata.
I mean,
maybe the funniest part of the entire movie. I was cracking up, but that is a play on the original lyrics.
Yes.
You know, it's still very much an homage, and you're expecting it. You're like, okay, he's going to cut him off. He's not going to let him say farted. And then he says, in like, it's almost like Pumbaa has seen the original and is like, wait, aren't you going to stop me? Like, this is the part where you're supposed to stop me. I thought it was hilarious. I love the fact that they went through with that lyric.
Yeah. Although my other favorite little deviation they have right at the end here, let me just crank it up here. Here we go.
Just getting in the groove.
Now let's leave them wanting more.
Yeah, you've grown 400 pounds since we started.
Meanwhile, I look exactly the same.
It means no worry.
You tell them to stop. Oh, I insisted you started singing it.
It's our signature song. We shouldn't be sharing it.
But it's our signature song, so we have to. Look, just tell them to stop.
Oh, now he's riffing, Pumbaa.
That was my favorite part. Right at the end. Oh, now he's riffing, Pumbaa. It's a nightmare.
So good. So good. I do like that when they did the In the Jungle, that part, that they extended it.
Oh, yeah.
Because in the original, they just do a quick little line, and then they get interrupted. But I loved how they extended it, and all the other animals kind of come in, and like there's
the
just
one
in
like
addition to that,
the one like forest deer that's staring blankly at them is like weirdos.
The mighty
See, ladies and gentlemen, if Aaron were editing this episode, that would be gone.
Yes, yes. I may still edit this episode. He's like, we haven't decided yet.
Just watch me. Aaron cancels the published episode, re-edits it, and then uploads it. well, we kind of drove past it. Can we park on Billy Eichner for a second and just say that he's the breakout star of this movie, like by far, in my opinion, because like a lot of the, it's a classic amazing performance that fits and works really well, but nothing that's fresh, new, or surprising, except for Billy Eichner bringing his performance. And if you've never seen like Billy on the Street, me being already familiar with his comedic style, maybe already ingratiated myself more, and that's why I loved it so much. But he just really brings his personality to Timon, and that's honestly my favorite part of the movie. All the funniest parts, I loved it.
Yeah, Timon and Pumbaa were great. I thought Seth Rogen did a great job too. He played a little closer to the original,
yes,
than Billy Eichner did, but it still worked really well. The back and forth between those two characters really was flawless.
There's a, and you notice that they really, that sort of banter that was a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? It's just a lot of like off the cuff improv, that's the word, improv type dynamic between the two. And I was watching one of the behind the scenes videos where it's just them going back and forth in the song. And it's literally like Seth Rogen is recording his lines for the song, but Billy Eichner's there on the mic next to him, just like throwing in peppy commentary, trying out different lines. And one of the lines is, "I mean to what, Brad?" And then Seth Rogen's just immediately like spills his water laughing.
Liked that they added additional kind of around those two characters, because in the original movie, you just get them two living by themselves in this kind of like paradise type situation, and Simba moves in with them. But in this movie, they made it a little bit more realistic in that there was a whole population of animals there that were kind of their own little characters.
Yeah.
That was something that was a lot different than what we got in the animated movie, but it added a lot more comedy, and I think it made that whole part of the movie just a lot more rich, which was evidenced in when they did the In the Jungle song. It wasn't just the three of them kind of going through. It was this entire crowd of animals that really let them show off the CGI in those scenes too. Like every animal that they showed looked like a real freaking animal. Like, yeah. I felt like I was watching a nature channel a lot of times, more so than just a CGI animated movie.
But did that negatively impact some of the characterization? Because that's something I've seen in some of the reviews online, is that it doesn't capture as much of the heart and personality of the animation of the original because they're so faithful to being realistic. It's almost like they hired Jon Favreau to really do the work that he did in Jungle Book and these really faithful adaptations.
I think given what the alternative would have been, I think they went the right way with it. I think you try to make it realistic looking animals, but then give them over the top expressions, it's going to look odd. It's going to look comical. And I think this is just a different platform for the same story. So, you know, the animated film gave you the platform that you can have kind of over the top, and you have animals that are like literally, you know, pyramiding on top of each other as a song's going on. And then in this movie, they stayed very true to what animals can actually do and the way their faces can actually look. And it didn't bother me at all. I know I had seen that criticism of it, but I'm kind of thinking, well, what did you want them to do with it? You know, you want to have cartoony faces on realistic animals?
Yeah. Heck no.
So, no, I liked it. I thought that they did what they probably should have done with it, and I think it worked for me. And, you know, you can convey a lot of emotion through voice, which I thought the actors really did a good job with.
Yeah, for sure. And that's really where I think where the heart of the movie comes, is the vocal performance. Any other particular standouts to you that maybe surprised you along the way as far as seeing the movie?
Something about the end felt really rushed, but I don't know why. You know, because it felt like they stayed pretty true to the way the original ended, but it was kind of like once Simba decided to go back, and then Timon and Pumbaa come with him, and then they, you know, get back to the Pride Lands, and then it seemed to just like really go fast from there, which I don't know if there was just the pacing was a little off, Or I kind of feel like I need to rewatch the animated film and kind of see how they did it to see if it fits better. Or maybe I'm just forgetting because, you know, you have that kind of rose-colored glasses when you look at older stuff sometimes. And maybe pacing was off in the original, too. They're just mimicking that.
It does. He does kind of like, well, I'm back. Time to battle. Which actually, I guess I didn't mention this. I was watching with, and she's been on the show here, the original Lion King the week before it came out. We watched the original, and it is also very similar. I can say, having recently watched it, that ending kind of just sneaks up on you. You know what
I
mean?
Okay. So yeah, it's probably just they were a bit, you know, restricted in that they were trying to stick so close to the story, even within its flaws. It felt a little rushed at the end, for sure. I thought Donald Glover, although nothing against how well he did, but I think his voice is just so recognizable to me now. And probably more so for his role before even he played Lando or before Atlanta, back Community? When he was in that comedy show called Community. I don't know if you're... Where he plays Troy. And he has that... He kind of plays... when he plays Simba, he uses that Troy voice more... than I've heard in a while. So it kind of took me out of it when I heard him start talking. I'm like, oh, Troy and Abed in the morning. You know, like, it just kind of, it took me out of it a little bit. I'm like, oh, I'm listening to Troy.
But. ¿Dónde está la biblioteca? Have you seen that clip from Community?
I've seen all of Community, yeah.
Okay. I figured if all people, you would get the reference for me. Yeah, no, for sure. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to bring a wrap on this episode of Mouse and Castle. Before we give you guys the takeaways and some of the plugs and where to find cool things, maybe one last takeaway in the lexicon of live action. Where do you rank Lion King, sir?
Oh, man. I don't know where I'd rank it. I think it's definitely, you know,
north of Dumbo.
It's better than Dumbo, but I like to compare it to the original sometimes and think, okay, this is, you know, not as good. And I think, like, to me, the original animated films are kind of the gold standard. And although I enjoyed this movie, it was fun to watch this version of it. I still would, you know, I'd watch the original animated film, you know, 10 times more than I'd watch this one. It stayed probably a little too close to the original. I kind of wish that they had done a few different things, maybe added a couple, you know, a couple storylines or added a couple little side things that would have added to the story instead of staying so close to it. But I mean, the CGI was just amazing.
Yeah.
And it was fun. It was just fun to watch that story because it's such a good story. It was just a different medium to watch it in. And I thought they did a really good job with it. So, I mean, I'd definitely say it was a positive experience for me. I think I liked Aladdin more if I'm trying to compare it to something recent.
Yeah.
Just because Aladdin kind of was a little bit more different and added some things. But, you know, they both are really enjoyable summer movies.
Yeah. It is. Because three freaking live action movies this year. And I don't know that I got to put Aladdin above it, but definitely way above the first one of the year, which is Dumbo. And of course, I think to your point about like how the originals, what's the word I'm looking for? How the originals are basically the standard, and all of these are trying to live up to something like that is a cultural classic. It's a tribute to an incredible film, but it's not going to be its own thing. And again, that's where I come in on. I, broadly speaking, on these Disney films, I get most excited about the films that are unique in bringing something new, because that's where we get Frozen. That's where we get Moana. That's where we get Tangled, like some of these newer classics that are stories that stand on their own. But as if you're dealing with making a Lion King movie, I can't think of how else you could have made this much better. So definitely highly recommend, and I'd put it up towards the top of the live action adaptations, if you're asking me.
In the top half?
Top half, for sure.
Okay.
Still going to be above your Cinderella. Well, with one exception, and that is, of course, the brand new classic, which by far has cast a shadow upon its original, and that is Beauty and the Beast. come at me, bro.
you're so wrong. I thought you were going to say Christopher Robin.
No. Oh, man.
One of these days, we should actually get we should get the list out.
Yeah,
of the current remakes and kind of do a ranking.
That'd be fun. That'd be a fun little episode. But like I say, until next time, thanks so much for listening. If you want to stay in touch with the show, here's what you want to do in between episodes. You, of course, catch our newsletter, weekly newsletter, the Mouse and Castle newsletter. It's available. It's a button on our website. You can click mouseandcastlepodcast.com. But you can also just go to bit.ly/mouseandcastle. Super easy to find the newsletter there. Follow us on Twitter @mouseandcastle. Same thing for Instagram. You'll find a lot of cool pictures from my recent Disney trip. And a bunch of really cool things coming up, too. And make sure you subscribe to the show if you haven't already. And you'll find the links to everything we've talked about at mouseandcastlepodcast.com. Mr. Aaron Goins, where can people find you on the internet?
Mainly AV Goins on Twitter and Instagram. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yes, for sure. And your other podcasting endeavors, you can also find Star Wars Bookworms anywhere where you find podcasts for you Star Wars literature lovers. And of course, check out, if you like Star Wars, check out the Star Wars Report podcast. I had Scott Rifen on this week detailing some of my time at the Disney parks as well. But until next time, may the magic stay with you and may you stay the king of your Pride Rock. How's it, Aaron? Is that decent? Give me something, man.
I like the smooth delivery.
I just had the one thing and that's, but not both. I had the right idea. Dang it. I'm so close. I mean, to what, Brad? Oh no, now he's riffing. A nightmare.
Yeah, no.
Gosh,
we didn't talk about Beyonce in the movie. I that was another thing that kind of took me out of it.
Oh, really? The song?
And just her voice is so recognizable,
and it just like drops in the middle of the movie too.
And I'm just like, oh wow, Beyonce! Like she's I almost wish they had gone with somebody a little less recognizable, so you're not thinking Beyonce the whole time you're listening to this lion sing.
Yeah. That's true. I wasn't a big fan of that song either.
She brings a big audience too, so I mean, it's not a bad casting choice. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, probably really enjoyed that she was in it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We'll catch you guys next time here at the Mouse and Castle.
Rafiki was so underused.
Oh, yeah. That's true. We didn't even talk about him.
Oh, well, yeah. That's probably why.
Yeah.
He was kind of just there. I was like, because in the animated movie, he was kind of like this really cool character that was a bit mysterious. And you're like, oh, this guy, what's he all about? And he's like important and everybody kind of sees him as like this. And then in this movie, he didn't even say a word, I don't think, until like... I don't know when he said Simba when he saw the little like piece of hair, but I was just like, oh, they could have fleshed out his character a little more. That would have been a good opportunity to kind of add some content. And then the fact that they had to use some kind of like a poop ball when they were trying to transfer that hair piece, that was kind of weird too.
Oh, that was awful. I forgot about that. That was gross.
I was like, really? That's what we're doing here? So
it's a poop joke.
I don't even know if it was supposed to be a joke. I think it was just
I know,
because
it was like played straight.
It was like, we need to get this piece of hair across, you know, the plains or whatever. Like, how do we do that? Like, there weren't people in that room that were just like, you know, the wind could just take it.
Yeah.
You know, we don't Like, we don't have to have a giraffe eat it.
We don't, no. In fact, please don't, actually.
Yeah, like the ants, the wind, like just there's so many different things that could happen. A bird, you could have gotten caught in a bird's claw. Jeez. But yeah, poop, dude, not necessary.